Live from beyond the Beltway, this is Bruce Dumont with our weekly analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Mike Miller from Western Washington University, Bernard Rad from UCLA, Republican attorney Judith Sherwin in studio, and Ray Hanania of Arab News. He joins us as well. Our phone lines open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. We've got a full 2 hours. We have lots to talk about. We're not going to just talk about Donald Trump tonight. That's for damn sure. And but we will talk about him a little bit later on. But we're going to talk about the student protests that have popped up on college campuses all over the United States, literally hundreds of college campuses, and over 2,500 arrests made, some police confrontation in New York City, Los Angeles, and elsewhere. And again, I want to get a reaction from those listening to the program this evening who have a little gray in their hair, and also for some of those who are guests in studio who don't have as much gray hair in their hair. But I want to get your assessment as to how much is what we're experiencing right now like 1968? That's a question that I have for you. But first of all, I want to begin with Benjamin Rad, who's become a good friend of this program. He is a professor in Middle Eastern Studies and History from UCLA. And last week, Benjamin, UCLA was, along with Columbia University, was in the spotlight for the student protests that took place there. I spent a part of last week in Los Angeles, so I was watching the television coverage from your local cable operation virtually every night, and it was getting obviously pretty dicey out there. So what, from your perspective as a professor on campus, how would you describe what's happening at UCLA now?
Thank you for having me back. As of now, the situation has calmed dramatically, but going into last Monday night and into Tuesday morning when the violence erupted, you had a situation that we've seen on many other campuses, which were these student encampments taking over public parts of the campus, including parts that many students use to access other buildings, other parts of the campus. And it became a detour at best, an obstruction at worst. There were some allegations of harassment or taunting or refusing entry to students into some buildings or passageways based on what camp, what view, what religious background they had. And there were allegations like this, some of which are pretty credible, I would say, because, you know, they're from students, some students whom I know, who I don't have any reason to believe that they would make this up. But nevertheless, the administration allowed this to persist far too long. And I think what you then saw, the culmination of it was groups counter-protesting, organizing to push back against this one narrative, this one position, and then inevitably bad actors on both sides escalating it to the point of violence erupting. And that's where we were as of last week. But like I said, it's now since calmed dramatically.
Now, in watching the coverage, primarily on cable television, it has been described as a battle between pro-Palestinian, anti-Israeli experience of Middle Eastern policies. It's been described as the protesters want disinvestment in the state of Israel. And then part of the discussion that was popped up on national television last week, that this was a discussion of anti-Semitism on campus. And they used, they led with the subject of anti-Semitism not related to U.S. foreign policy. So can you sort out any of those based on the experience that you saw and heard and experienced at UCLA?
Well, that's precisely the problem. Each and every one of those positions you described or issues, all of them were at play in the encampment. You have those, the segment, who are pro-Palestinian, meaning advocating for Palestinian autonomy, self-rule, dignity, equality, fairness, all those things. You have another faction that was very militantly beyond pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas, taking Hamas talking points, wearing Hamas paraphernalia, flying Hamas banners or logos, signs, things of that nature, and taking much more maximalist positions, you know, the chants of from the river to the sea, basically a unitary state or a state that doesn't involve Israel existing in its current form. Mm-hmm. And then you had the select few. You had infamously a van that was parked in front of Royce Hall that absolutely carried anti-Semitic slogans on there, that had a intermingling of a swastika and a Star of David on it. Again, lots of Nazi or white supremacist iconography, lots of anti-Semitic rhetoric. So that faction represented, you know, had elements of all these views. And that's what became problematic, was if there was a, you know, genuine altruistic, if we can say, pro-Palestinian position, it was diluted by the presence of all these other bad elements that really undermined, mm-hmm. I think, the message that those students wanted to convey. And that's what led to a big source of the problem.
Ray Hanania joins us. He is a long time, he's an Arab American, served in the U.S. Military. Ray is with Arab News. He covers Arab-related news in the United States, has been a guest on this program for well over 30 years. Ray, from your perspective, of the narratives that I have described, how have you seen them portrayed by the media?
Well, I think it's accurate to say that you're going to see some ugliness on both sides. And the problem, though, is how much ugliness do you see on one side, what's portrayed, and how much ugliness are you able to see on the other side? And then you look at the outside agitators, and I consider that members of Congress who are interjecting themselves and weaponizing what I think is anti-Semitism to punish people. So I think part of the problem is that students should be allowed to protest. I think back to the 1960s during the Vietnam War and the 1970s. There was no limit to the protests. We took over buildings, you know, at Northern Illinois University. We vandalized, you know, I hate to say it, but buildings were vandalized. Nobody accused us of being anti-American. There were supporters of the war who accused us of being communist, outside agitators, mm-hmm. and even terrorists. But, you know, part of the problem, I think, is there are a lot of key players who are exploiting this for political purposes, and I don't think we're getting a correct picture of the violence and the hate that's coming from both sides.
Judith Sherwin joins us. She's in studio. We've only got 30 seconds for your quick answer, but take a little bit of it now, and we'll give you more after.
Thank you. So, first of all, there's no both sides here. I hate listening to this, you know, oh, the Palestinians, oh, the Israelis, they're all just a bunch of terrible children, and we need to get them all under control. What you have here is not the protests of the 1960s. What you have here is the beginnings of Nazi Germany from 1938. You have a delegitimization of anybody on campus who does not agree with the Palestinian position, and you have universities supporting anti-Semites.
Okay.
It took a long time for us to get here, but here we are.
Okay. That is your start. We'll hear from other guests when we come back, including the legendary voice from Western Washington.
I'll be here to hear what's on your mind.
Kids want to share what's going on in their lives with the adults around them. Parents, grandparents, teachers, coaches, and more. They want to know you're listening, and they want to listen to you. They want your input and guidance, early and often, on all kinds of topics. When it comes to a serious subject like underage drinking, they want to know your expectations, as well as how and why, as a young person, they should avoid alcohol. How you talk about it will change as your child grows, but the important thing is to talk about it. Not just once for an hour when you think the time is right, but in 60 one-minute conversations and more that are part of your everyday talks. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
When you need me, I'll be by your side.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Dr. Nia Hergaris with today's tip for kids from the American Academy of Pediatrics. As parents, we want our children to grow up healthy and strong. That means helping teens take responsibility for their health as they become young adults. One way to do that is to make sure they have one-on-one time with their pediatrician. That helps them become comfortable talking about any health issue with their doctors and with you. So make sure to give your teen a voice. It's good for their health. For more on teen health, visit healthychildren.org.
I think it's just vapor.
Vaping is safer than smoking, isn't it?
There's really not even that much nicotine in them, right?
One vape pod has as much nicotine as one pack of cigarettes.
My kid
knows it's dangerous.
5.4 million American kids vape, and most think it's harmless. Get your head out of the cloud. Talk to your kid about vaping. Visit talkaboutvaping.org. That's talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back. We continue, and Mike Miller, who is a regular guest on this program on the first Sunday of every month, has been sitting quietly out in Western Washington, ready to weigh in on issues. So, Mike, you've heard a whole segment. What would you like to respond to first?
I'll tell you, in looking at teaching young people for the past 45 years and so forth, even comparing it to what happened in 1968, what astounds me about these particular protests are how they have morphed over the past month or so. They have gone from a reasonable debate as to whether or not there should be a ceasefire. Now, I don't think there should have been. I'm on one particular side. But at least it was an arguable position. And it has simply morphed into a anti-Jew, all Jews must die, Palestine must have all the land. It's something I did not see coming. I didn't think it would get this extreme. But if I could add one more piece, I think this is not – I should have been not surprised, because at the universities, so many students are taught a Marxist cultural ideology that there are oppressors and there are oppressed. And they believe – and what we have now is that the students have been convinced – that the Jews are the oppressors and the Palestinians are the oppressed, and therefore the Palestinians cannot be wrong. You cannot in any way attack people who are oppressed. And so I think students have no depth of knowledge. They have no depth of understanding of this particular event.
I want to go to Benjamin, by the way, not Bernard, Benjamin Rad, who joins us from UCLA. Benjamin, I have had guests on this program who have agreed with what Mike Miller has just said, what Judith Sherwin has just said, and to some extent, I guess Ray would maybe agree with this as well, that it's the professors. It's the professors on campus that are breeding this hatred. Now, you're a professor. I don't sit in your classes, but you've heard that, at least from the right, you've heard that criticism. So how would you react as a member of academia to that charge? Is there truth to it?
It's absolutely a valid criticism. I also teach at the law school at UCLA. I'm a lecturer there. We had a few days ago a faculty member send to the faculty email listserv a rant, basically, against the decision to have the LAPD come and to dismantle the encampment, saying that there should be solidarity with the protesters, blaming the violence on what he called white supremacist pro-Zionist groups And this is from a tenured faculty member. So absolutely, it begins sometimes with the faculty, and other times it begins on social media, where a lot of these students get a lot of information or misinformation on the issue. And we have faculty who feel their job is not just to educate, but to propagate, to advocate, to become evangelists for a certain point of view. And that goes absolutely beyond their mandate. It's not what we're being paid to do. And yet they consider it part of their mission. So I think when that hubris sets in and the faculty engage in that, it makes a difficult problem even worse. So I would agree with those criticisms.
Ray Hanania, do you agree with those criticisms or not?
No, I don't. I didn't think so. I'm not going to agree with it either. First of all, there are many Jewish activists that are working and supporting on the Palestinian side. Many. Now, people may want to disparage Jewish voices for peace if they want, because they don't agree with their politics. But let's just be honest and just say this is a political debate. We've weaponized epithets. We've weaponized name calling. It's a one-sided thing, and to be honest with you, it's very hard to criticize Israel, which claims to be a Jewish state. And if you say the word Jewish in any context about a Jewish state, you're suddenly anti-Semitic. Criticizing Israel is not anti-Semitic. There are some anti-Semites, I'm sure, on the Arab side, and I think there are a lot of Islamophobes and anti-Arab racists on the pro-Israel side. And for people to deny that is just beyond belief. It's a reflection of individual politics. Nobody wants to see the truth here. No one's looking at a way to get out of this. They're all looking at a way to kind of win and defeat the other side. And that's kind of sad.
Judith.
Yeah, you know, this point of view is just bizarre to me. First of all, this business about white supremacists. White supremacists are supposedly people who don't like Jews. So I doubt very much that they'd be supporting the state of Israel. Why would they be supporting Palestine against the state of Israel? I have no idea. They probably don't like them either. So to claim that Jews are white supremacists, that people who support them are white supremacists, is absolutely irrational and ridiculous. That's number one. Number two, this whole idea that, you know, it's perfectly okay to preach all these really unsupported stories about the Palestinian oppression and the occupation. There was no occupation, and there was a ceasefire that existed on October 6th before a bunch of people hopped up on drugs, which they were able to find out later when they examined the dead bodies, came across and murdered people in their sleep, murdered children and young adults at a music festival, and did it with impunity, and took video of it, which is the only reason we know exactly what they did.
Judith, can you address the reports that I've heard numerous times over the last couple of weeks that in these demonstrations, in amongst those who support the Palestinian position, there are Jewish student groups?
There are definitely Jewish student groups. There have always been what we have to deal with, which is we, meaning Jewish people, have to deal with what we call self-hating Jews. There are a number of very left-wing Jews who are very anti-Israel. There is actually a very religious group of Jews in Israel who are anti-Israel. You have seen pictures of men wearing, you know, the traditional Hasidic Jewish garb, holding signs against the state of Israel. There's that group too. That doesn't make the position of people on the campus saying, from Israel to the sea, Palestine shall be free. First of all, most of them don't know which sea and they don't know which river, but they don't seem to understand if that were true, there would be no state of Israel. What are you going to do with the 9 million people who are there? You're going to kill them?
But if you are Jewish, can you be pro-Israel, or pro-Palestinian, but anti-Netanyahu? Is that a delineation that is not yet made? Because there are, and I think in the past guests on this program, I think you have one who have said there's a lot of people in Israel that don't like Netanyahu, and he probably wouldn't get reelected.
So here's the story.
Where's that perspective?
Okay, so here's the perspective on that. There are a lot of people in Israel who are anti-Netanyahu, okay? So what's going to happen? There'll be a new election, maybe in 6 months, maybe less than 6 months. They're talking about September. Netanyahu will not be reelected. He won't be able to put a government together. He'll still get about 30 or 40 seats, mm-hmm. but he won't be able to get the other 20, and then he won't be able to put a government together. So eventually, somebody's going to put a government together. They'll be in there for 8 months. The place is going to fall apart again. They'll have another election. And guess who's going to be reelected, which is exactly what happened last time. He is, for whatever you want to say about him, the only person who perhaps is skillful enough or mean enough to deal with the factions in Israel that he has to deal with to keep the government together. Okay. And people know that.
Benjamin, do you agree with that assessment of Netanyahu's power and future influence?
He's remarkably resilient, but just like Golda Meir and her legacy did not survive the Yom Kippur War, I don't think Netanyahu will either. It's the greatest intelligence and security failure in Israel's history, and he is the only senior member of this current government, the only one who has not taken any accountability personally for any of what's happened. We've seen other defense, cabinet members, other high-ranking officials of the War Cabinet, all of them take responsibility, saying, "We failed you." To the people. Netanyahu has taken no such measures. He's made no efforts to publicly visit the families of the hostages or anything that indicates he has any
empathy. That's not true. Whatsoever. That is absolutely
not
true.
No, it is true.
No, I'm sorry. It is not true. He has been in constant touch with the families of the hostages. Where are you getting that from?
His legacy is sealed. It's done. This is not a criticism of the state. It's a criticism of its leadership.
Look, I don't disagree.
One at a time.
I don't disagree with you that Netanyahu is going to be thrown out of office over this. I said that before you started talking.
I want to go
what
back.
What I'm telling you is they won't have anybody else to take his place.
I want to go to Mike Miller and find out what is the climate at Western Washington University? Has there been much activity there, Mike?
There has been some. Relatively speaking, there are few Arab, there are few Muslims, and there are few Jews. But all the protests have been. There are, however, a lot of leftists, a lot of Marxists, and so forth. And it has been pro-Palestine. The only true protests have been against Israel. And Judith, I think the thing about the whiteness and so forth, the white supremacy, it goes back, and I don't want to keep harping on this, but there is this cultural Marxist view of the oppressor versus the oppressed.
I get it.
And Jews have been, and Israelis have been made into essentially honorary whites. They are exempting
right.
their
congratulations their
being,
to us.
The oppressor.
Yeah, no, yeah. Congratulations to us. We have become white people. The whole thing is crazy. It's completely crazy.
I agree. I don't. But it also shows that I think it makes clear that the students are responding not so much to necessarily Israel versus Palestine as they are oppressor versus oppressed. And their depth of knowledge is so little that they don't realize that they're becoming anti-Jew.
Yeah,
when we come back, I want to get Ray Hannity's response to that as well as our other guests. 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for joining us tonight.
This is Hugh Hewitt for townhall.com. What Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg is doing in Manhattan in his contrived case against Donald Trump is appalling, and it will get worse before it gets better in terms of interference with the campaign in a trial that should never have been begun, much less continued into the stretch run of the presidential campaign. We are watching a show trial, and everyone knows it. I expect a spectacular backlash from this abuse of the criminal law. Most Americans have due process in their bones, and they know Trump is not getting due process. They see the permanent government putting its thumb on the scale, or in this case, its entire fist on the scale. Pray the rebuke Democrats receive in November is enough to reset the party back somewhere close to where the old school liberals live. We don't need a two-party system where one party has lost its commitment to the rule of law and to our ally Israel. Democrats have abandoned them both. The reckoning is coming. I'm Hugh Hewitt.
I think it's just vapor.
Vaping is safer than smoking, isn't it?
There's really not even that much nicotine in them, right?
One vape pod has as much nicotine as one pack of cigarettes.
My kid knows it's dangerous.
5.4 million American kids vape, and most think it's harmless. Get your head out of the cloud. Talk to your kid about vaping. Visit talkaboutvaping.org. That's talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Matthew.
Huh? Oh, sorry.
It's okay. I just need you to listen to me.
I know that a lot of times, Mom, it might not seem like I'm listening to you, but I am. I hear you. And what you say really does matter to me.
I mean, let's be honest. No kid likes rules, but I get why we have them. I hear you, and I know it's because you care.
All the talks we've had over the years, including what you've told me about not using alcohol and other drugs, they stick with me. And believe it or not, they really do make a difference, especially at times that matter most.
Hey, want a drink?
No, thanks, I'm good. So thank you, Dad, for talking and preparing me for what's ahead.
Thanks, Mom, for never giving up and always being my biggest fan.
Thank you for letting me know what you expect, so I can try to meet your expectations.
Thank you for talking.
For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Let's be honest. The National Symphony may not be in his future, but he wanted to try violin. So you said yes because you love him. And if you love him that much, love him enough to make sure he's buckled up and in the back seat. Find out more about keeping your kids safe in your vehicle at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Show them you love them. Keep them safe. Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back. Thanks very much for joining us on Beyond the Beltway. This portion of our program, we let each guest take a moment to introduce themselves, give a little background information, and we'll begin with Benjamin Wren out at UCLA. Benjamin, go ahead.
I am a senior fellow at the UCLA International Institute's Burkle Center, where I focus on Middle East politics. I'm also a lecturer in global studies and at the School of Law.
And where are you from originally?
I am originally from Shiraz, Iran.
Okay. And let's go to Mike Miller. Mike, go tell us about yourself.
Oh, I spent 43 years in Chicago at DePaul University on the Faculty of Economics, retired in 23, moved to the Pacific Northwest so that our whole family was together. And I don't regret a second of that, getting out of Illinois and all the taxes you're going to have to pay back there. And I was lucky enough to fall into a position at Western Washington teaching my love, which is macroeconomics. So for the next year or two, at minimum, I'll be teaching at Western. And it's great to interact with the young folks.
Good. Well, I should also mention that the young folks back in Chicago at DePaul, they're engaged in this discussion on campus.
Yes, I hear.
It's been a while since we've heard from them, but they're back on campus chanting, and some are being arrested this afternoon. Judith Sherwin, go ahead.
That's
to
what
you.
I hear.
30 seconds.
Hi, I'm Judith Sherwin. I practice law in Chicago. I also teach at Loyola University Law School, where I taught subjects in constitutional law, also ethics, occasionally business ethics, and religious freedom. And I've been practicing law for a number of years and enjoy coming on this show.
And your late husband was a rabbi.
And my late husband was a rabbi, and I am Jewish.
Okay. Let's go to Ray Hanania. Ray, a little background on who you are.
I studied under Milton Rako for several years. I covered Chicago politics for 17 years at City Hall. I left City Hall partly because I got in an argument with the publishers over my Palestinian background and wanting to cover an assignment that they did not want me to cover in the West Bank. I write for a bunch of suburban newspapers, the regional Des Plaines Valley News, Southwest News Herald. I also write a column, syndicated column at Hanania.com. And I also write for Arab News, which is one of the largest English language newspapers in the Gulf and the Middle East. And of course, I'm Palestinian. My wife is Jewish and my son is Jewish.
Okay. Let's go to Jeannie in Austin, Texas on KLBJ. Go ahead, Jeannie.
Hi, Bruce. I love your show. You know I've called in before. I'm a musician in Austin.
Thank you. Yes.
Sing, rock, and roll. Yes. I just want to say I disagree with all your guests except the last speaker who just spoke because, you know, Bruce, I want you to know that 5 years ago I quit buying into the propaganda that the U.S. had been pushing on Americans all these years. All of these years. And you know what? If I lived in Texas, I live in Texas, but if Arizona had control over Texas and told me how much water I could have to wash my hair, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, we all know what was going on. But yet, oh, you know, dare you criticize Israel. You know, and I am pro-Israeli people. I am pro-Palestinian people. I am against the Israeli government. And another thing y'all are not covering, I think this is very negligent on the press and radio shows, and Bruce, I'm going to criticize you, because in Austin, Texas, for 6 months now, they at city council meetings, yes, they've gotten rowdy, but there are Jewish groups that are also speaking out for a ceasefire, et cetera. But you don't see that. And also at UCLA, this guy who's on, you know, you got all lawyers on. I don't want to hear all lawyers. But anyway, the UCLA guy that's your guest right now, he also knows at that big the protest that got out of hand for 2 or 3 hours, all of those people that were knocking down the pro-Palestinian encampments, they were all white. And guess what they were chanting? USA! USA! That's Trump right there. And also, I just feel like for y'all to downplay all these people and really talk down to a lot of us that are pro-Palestinian, I'm pro-Israeli, I know what I know. Okay? You're not going to change my mind and no one else's, but for y'all to sit there and go, all these college students, you know, they don't even know the C's and they don't know this and that. No, we do know. Okay? I just think that this is pathetic, Bruce, that you have only lawyers on. I'm sick of it. Pundits, pundits. And this lady, Judith.
I don't just have lawyers on. Say again?
No, I'm saying like right now today. It's like, and Judith, you've been on. I every time I listen, Beyond the Beltway, you're on. And, you know, I'm tired of your opinion, lady. We, the people, need to have our opinion. But anyway, Bruce, thank you for letting me speak. Thank you.
Okay.
That's all I have to say.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for the vote of confidence. What's her name? Jeannie.
Well, yeah. You can't please all the people all
Jeannie,
the time.
Jeannie, please take a chill pill. Okay. So, first of all, I would like to point out it's a minor point. It's not just a Jewish issue. People running around supporting Hamas, who are terrorists, are supporting a group that is rather anti-American. So when they do tear down Hamas signs and say USA, USA, they are promoting the United States of America, as did the fraternity kids in North Carolina who surrounded the American flag and kept Palestinian demonstrators from tearing down the flag. The American flag, not the Israeli flag, the American flag.
I want to go to Ray, because I want to go back to the narrative, the way this story is unfolding, and minds being molded or corrected or supported by the news
perverted
coverage of it. Where does this, again, I get back to my opening question this evening is, I'm trying to see if there's a similarity between what happened in 1968, and as I listen to the narrative and the media coverage of this, it's getting all mushed together. I mean, I don't know whether we're having a serious discussion of U.S. foreign policy, which I would like to have, or a serious discussion of the future of Israeli politics, which I'd like to have, or is it... you've got people saying death to America, and where is that coming from? So is there, and you have talked about outside agitators that are involved. To what extent, in your view, Ray, are we dealing with a lot of outside agitators, maybe just the core leftists, who are trying to confuse this message to the American people? Because it seems to me that if they're doing that, I think they're winning.
That first of all, that outside agitator thing is completely baloney, because there are outside agitators on both sides. And instead of arguing propaganda points, We should talk factually about both sides, but we're Let's never going to get there. Well, we're never going to get there because I, Judith, I don't want to pick on somebody personally, but Judith made a point that I think is very offensive, that, yes, October 7th was a horrendous terrorist attack. Hamas is a terrorist organization. So is Netanyahu's government.
Oh,
it's
come
a
on.
Terrorist
oh,
organization.
My God, that's ridiculous. Now, see that? Netanyahu is a terrorist.
Propaganda.
Are you
Judith,
out of your
Judith, let him finish.
Let him finish.
It doesn't matter. Oh yeah, okay. Let
Something
him
like
so
that. I mean,
what,
seriously,
am I anti-Semitic
Bruce?
Because I'm attacking
hey, just
Netanyahu's
a second. Judith,
government?
Judith, one, of course, I get a sense. Just one second. I'll go. I'd like to have a discussion here. You and I go back a long way, and I want to
have
a discussion.
We're not going to have a discussion about Israel. It's not going to be a discussion because there's no objective person on any of this. Prior to October 7th, 230 Palestinians were killed by Israel's Netanyahu government in 2023. And in 2022, 420 Palestinians were killed by the Israelis. So it isn't like things just happen. But we can't have a discussion because when it comes to Israel, I think many people who support Israel get very offended by it. And they want to attack anybody who challenges Israel's government. They're the worst government I've ever seen. They've destroyed the peace process. That's Netanyahu's entire agenda. And it bothers me that we kind of – I want to thank the caller. And I think all of you should listen because that caller is representing a growing voice in this country. And I'm offended that people would call them fascists or Nazis. The fascism is in – Netanyahu's government right now, and nobody okay. wants to call it out.
Now, let me go back. Now, you've had your comment. I want Judith, go to you. Your response to Ray.
I don't even know where to begin. First of all, to call the Israeli government Nazis and fascists is probably the most offensive thing you could possibly
do. And I never call them Nazis.
I don't
I
know.
Call them fascists.
I don't
know.
So, fascists. Good. Wonderful.
Don't put words in my mouth.
Okay. Well, so you okay, call them is... fascists. Okay. That's right. Wonderful. I'll give you a star for that. I don't know whether you're anti-Semitic or not. Okay? I do know you are deluded on certain things. And one of them happens to be what's going on with all of these protests. All right, the idea that the Palestinians have been oppressed without reason. You know, the reason that Israelis try to control what goes on or tried to control what was going on in Gaza was a security reason. Do you know how many Jews were killed? Israelis were killed by Palestinians in completely unprovoked. Excuse me, not true. Not. True,
true,
not true. How would you like to take a ride from the south side of Chicago to the north side of Chicago, stop to get gas and get murdered at the gas station? Would you like that? Would you like people to come into your house with explosives and try to kill your children? What would you do about that? Those are the kinds of things that are going on in Israel with the Palestinians in terms of their violence toward the Israelis. The Israelis have a right to protect themselves from that.
When we come back, I want to bring it back to where the discussion began this evening, and that is what's happening on American college campuses is how long is it going to last? Is there going to be an explosion? At some point, I don't mean a verbal explosion, is going to be some kind of an explosion, an event that taps this down. And we've got Democratic and Republican conventions coming up. Back shortly from Chicago.
This is Dennis Prager. Sign up today for an unforgettable experience in Israel this October. Mike Gallagher and I are traveling to the Holy Land on the Stand with Israel tour with our trusted partner, Inspiration Cruises and Tours. This trip of a lifetime to Israel is one you don't want to miss. Register today before it's too late at StandWithIsraelTour.com, StandWithIsraelTour.com, or call 855-565-5519, 855-565-5519.
I think it's just vapor.
Vaping is safer than smoking, isn't it?
There's really not even that much nicotine in them, right?
One vape pod has as much nicotine as one pack of cigarettes.
My kids? My kiddos,
it's dangerous.
5.4 million American kids vape, and most think it's harmless. Get your head out of the cloud. Talk to your kid about vaping. Visit talkaboutvaping.org. That's talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Why was the basketball court all wet? Because the players kept dribbling on it.
The dad joke. Corny, groan-worthy, but also one of the simplest ways to share a moment with your kids.
What did the buffalo say when he dropped his son off for school?
Bye, son.
So take a moment to make your kid laugh, because dad jokes rule. Make your kid laugh today. Go to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
What if the music stopped? If the familiar voices were silenced? If there were no breaking news updates? What if your companion and connection to your community came with a monthly fee? Don't worry, we're free local radio with you wherever you go. Celebrating 100 years and looking forward to the next 100. We are broadcasters. Text radio to 52886 and let Congress know you depend on your local TV and radio stations. This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago, and reaching out to Benjamin Radd at UCLA. And Benjamin, looking ahead to the conventions, the Republican and the Democratic convention, which will take place in Chicago in August, this is where a number of people in the media are drawing a comparison to what happened in 1968. So my question to you at this moment in time, take us through what you think will evolve between now and election day. And is this going to have a significant impact on voter turnout and voter results?
Well, a lot of that will hinge on what happens with regards to the conflict in the coming weeks and months. There is there's talks of a pending offer right now on the table, waiting Hamas's response. Let's see if that goes through. Basically, will this crisis come to some sort of an end or a resolution between now and election day? That's going to determine a lot of what happens, I think. So it's too much to speculate. There's a lot of time between now and November when people go to the ballot boxes. So I think waiting to see what takes shape the next few weeks will determine what we can expect come late summer, early fall.
Mike Miller, what is your projection of the future?
I think it's the one thing, and Benjamin is correct. I think if this ceasefire does go through, that will change things. It will not be in the news as much in each day. And of course, we could have a ceasefire tomorrow if the Hamas essentially would end its war crime of holding hostages, if it would simply give up the hostages and say that they're going to step away from power in Gaza. This war, that not just a ceasefire, this war would end.
Do you think the protest would end? Would the protest end quickly?
I think so, because, what do they have to say then? The only thing they could say was, we have to destroy the state of Israel, because that's not going to happen. But see, the one thing that you were mentioning about 1968 or whatever, at least the things that they were protesting back then, as I remember it was the draft, and there was something, in fact, that they could influence through their actions, and in fact they did, and the United States government passed a volunteer army, and all of a sudden the protests stopped. the thing that astounds me about this, not only about the morphing from let's have a ceasefire into let's destroy all Jews in Israel, is that the and of course I'm that there's nothing these students can do to change Netanyahu's or Hamas's position. At least back in the 60s, they could do something, and they did.
Can they continue to create a climate like is on the climate right now, where classes don't take place, or they take place via video? I mean, are there ways that students can continue? I want to get Benjamin's response to this. Are there ways in which they can win on this?
If there is a ceasefire, the universities will stand up and say, I'm sorry, you can no longer disrupt the normal day-to-day life of the university. And I think the universities will finally have a backbone and step in and do something about it. But again, I don't understand these students. I don't think they truly understand the issues. They have just been caught up in the fervor of the time. And there's nothing they can do like they could back in the 1960s to get the government to fundamentally change a policy.
Do you agree that there would be a change in the treatment of students if the ceasefire were to happen and the students were still to be protesting? Because one of the things they want to protest is they don't like the idea of major colleges and universities investing in either Israel or organizations or companies that support Israel. Isn't that going to be an ongoing battle for them?
You're referring to the BDS movement, the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement.
Yes.
That's been a phenomenon for many, many years now. And it's sort of it's fruitless because you have essentially these universities are heavily invested in these index funds where essentially, ownership assets are scattered throughout multiple companies. And you can't just divest from one entity. That's not how these universities invest for their endowment. So that hasn't gained any traction. It's not going to. There's really no currency to it. And I think that regardless of whether there's a ceasefire or not, what the universities have shown in the last 2 weeks is that they've reached their almost zero tolerance position for this. Given now, we've seen what happens when they don't preempt it, when they don't get in front of it quickly, it can escalate to violence, to mayhem, and the damage, the PR damage, the optics of it exceed any defense and justification of free speech rights you can imagine. So I imagine the universities will be ahead of this whether or not there is a ceasefire in the coming weeks or months.
Ray Hanania, where do you see this unfolding?
I think the student protests are going to continue regardless of what Israel does, regardless of whether there's a peace process with Hamas between two terrorist organizations. Part of the problem is that Israel's violence doesn't end with this process. People are being killed every week. Among the Palestinians and some Israelis, but I think that they're bigger issues. I think that the state, for example, you have like 30 states that have passed laws that punish people that say that they boycott the state of Israel and Israel's government. I think those laws have to be stripped. So I think that there is something bigger than just one tragic act of terrorism, a horrible act of terrorism that took place on October 7th. This is going to continue. And when I look at the 1968 protests, they lasted through the mid-70s.
Right.
We saw four people killed in 1970 at protests, anti-war protests. Those protests went all the way through 1973. These are not going to end because Palestinians and their supporters, Jewish, enlightened Jewish Americans who believe that Netanyahu is a terrorist, are going to continue to support them. And yes, you call them whatever you want, but they're going to be there. I also think one important point, you're going to see more younger people supporting the Palestinian cause and older people supporting Israel. And when you look at the recent polling, you see that number of young people increasing significantly.
Judith Sherwin, your view, 30 seconds.
Yeah, well, I hate to agree, but I do believe the protests aren't going to stop. I think the Chicago Democratic National Convention is going to be a nightmare. It is going to be a lot worse, and the music is playing.
Yep.
So
the music is playing. We got to go.
Please let me have a chance to respond.
You'll be back for hour number two. Benjamin Radd, thank you very much for joining us. You say farewell to us. Keep things alive and interesting at UCLA. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly with another full hour of our program. Come on back. We continue with hour number two. Benjamin Rod has left us for this hour. However, we continue with Mike Miller and Ray Hanania and Judith Sherwin. Phone lines open 1-800-723-8029. And before the break, Judith, you made a comment about the 1968 Democratic Convention and the fact that the Democratic Convention is coming back to Chicago and some of the same political winds may be blowing. So you wanted to make a comment about that, and I know that Ray and Mike have things to comment as well.
Sure. So, you know, the convention, as you are fond of pointing out in this show, I have a sort of radical past, and right. I was on the park in 1968 during the Democratic Convention. The student movement in 1968 basically had two goals. One of them was to get rid of Johnson, who they viewed as the devil incarnate, and they were able to do that. They got him to agree he wasn't going to run for president again. They wanted to get Eugene McCarthy the nomination. That didn't happen. They wanted to end the draft. The draft was the reason there was such virulent opposition to the war. Mm-hmm. Okay, without the draft, there may have been opposition to the war, but it wouldn't have been as virulent as
right.
it was then.
Good point.
And so you go into the Democratic Convention, and the city just goes up for grabs for a variety of reasons. Who gets blamed for that? The end of the day, the people who got blamed for that were the Democrats. And that's how Richard Nixon became president of the United States. Okay. So, you know, you could have something of the same thing going on. I mean, I just was reading during the break that Gretchen Whitmer, who couldn't be, you know, a more Democrat personality in terms of who she is and the party and her position, she got confronted today at her daughter's graduation, which is horrific. I mean, people just are out of control yeah. in this country, yelling at her that she was supporting genocide. I mean, really, this is awful, but they are blaming. They, the protesters who support the Palestinians, are blaming the Democrats for this. They're not blaming the Republicans.
Now here, let me ask you this update, and then I want to get reaction from our other guests as well. In 1968, around the country, in Chicago, the mayor was Richard J. Daley.
Yep.
Very strong law and order. And he used the police in the city of Chicago to crack down, no pun intended, to crack down on the demonstrators because he thought there were outside agitators that were creating problems for him and for the Democratic Party. And it exploded live on television. We now have a situation where the mayor of Chicago is just the antithesis of Richard J. Daley.
Yeah, but he's going to have
Let me finish my question, Judith.
Sure. Okay.
Go ahead. Have someone now who is left of center. Do you think he's going to be giving the same directions to the Chicago Police Department that Richard J. Daley did 40 years ago?
He's not, but we're going to have the same result. You're going to have chaos. You know you're going to have chaos. You have it now. It's going to get worse.
I want to go to Ray Hanania. Ray, do you, looking ahead to the Democratic Convention of this year, because you were, where were you in 1968, Ray? Were you on the streets, reporter, or... making bombs at home. What were you doing?
I was only 16 years old at the time, 17 years old.
It's old enough.
And I watched most of it, but I do remember that the protesters were influenced by the Students for Democratic Society, Jerry Rubin, a bunch of people who were outsiders who came in to help the protesters
right.
focus the protest. And I think we're going to see that same thing happen again this year. In Chicago, and I'll remind you that a national committee that reviewed what happened a year or two later concluded that the violence was a police riot That was their main conclusion about what happened during the Democratic convention. I think that
Dan Walker was his name. He was a business executive with Montgomery Wards. Right. He had this committee that looked into what happened here and gave his report. But we don't have that climate anymore. And again,
I think we do. Here's where I think we're different.
The people that reacted to that convention, Ray, who voted for Richard Nixon, they were watching on television. And all they saw on television was rough, tough police action against a bunch of hooligan college kids that middle America didn't really respect in any way. They might have been against the war, but they liked the idea of a strong law and order presence. That was perpetuated on television. Even the reporters, who were somewhat sympathetic to the protesters, they were all booed down. They were not held in any great respect. Even Walter Cronkite was trying to, you know, basically, you know, blame the police for what was happening.
Dan Rather. Dan Rather, too.
Yeah, the voters didn't react that way. So how do you
reporters
think the voters...
were beaten up?
Yes.
Reporters were beaten up at that convention?
But how
they're going to get beaten up again. I got news for you.
But wait a minute. In that particular case, Ray, final word to you.
No, not by the police.
Let me go back to you. Final word to you. How is that going to be different this time?
Well, I think Mayor Brandon Johnson is a little more progressive and he's in a much more balanced way than some of the other people that we're talking with. But so I think he's going to try to accommodate them and allow them to protest. I think they definitely will be there, but it will tear down the Democratic Party. I think that Joe Biden is done. He might as well quit right now, and if the Democrats want to go back to the White House, I think they're going to have to find somebody else. We're going to end up with Donald Trump, a guy who still faces I don't know how many indictments and allegations of crimes, and I think that we're in for a terrible 4 years to come. We're not going to see peace in the Middle East. This is just going to continue
Mike
to
Miller,
fuel anger.
I want to get Mike Miller's response. Mike Miller, historically... 1968 to 2024. Is there a real connection there?
Well, I had mentioned that I and Judy agreed there that the draft was the big thing. That's in my reading about it. I was only 15 in 1968, so it was something I was following. But I was as far back as then. I call myself conservative, and I hated to see what I see. I'm not convinced that there will be as much violence, and I'm not convinced that Ray is right that the Middle East will be the hot spot that everybody continues, because I think they're going to realize that they have no say in it. Students will be home. They will not be on the campus at the time.
Yeah.
And if anything, it's good for the Republicans because it'll focus the attention. I still think by the end of by November, it is going to be the economy, stupid. And the Democrats are not going to be addressing that. They'll be perceived as not being America first, which Mr. Trump will push. And I think that this could just add more and more to Mr. Trump's allure
The Democrats will be abortion first.
Right.
Oh, let's kill as many as we can.
They'll be wrapping themselves in the abortion flag, believing that that's the only way that women are going to vote for the Democrats. And when we come back, we're going to hear from Judith, who always continues to talk when I'm talking, but we'll let her talk by herself when we come back. I'm Bruce Dumont.
As a local business owner, you get called every week by marketing companies. We get it. We have hundreds of satisfied customers. Here's what a satisfied client recently said.
Open enrollment is going great. We're hitting record numbers. Thank you so much for this report. It really is amazing to see how the marketing is really shaping our enrollment around the city.
If you're a local business and ready for the next step, visit surroundchicago.com right now. Our experts are ready to help you take your marketing to the next level. Visit surroundchicago.com today.
In the new video series, Fault Lines, Professor Vodi Bauckham examines the threat of woke social doctrine versus biblical justice.
The religion of anti-racism has no redemption. We have to be right about what God requires in this critical moment.
Discover the fault lines beneath today's cultural divide.
What God are you trying to appease?
Fault Lines, the 10-part video series and essential 6-part study guide. Available at salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
There's another trial of Donald Trump. It's going on in New York, and it involves Stormy Daniels. You've all heard about it, read about it. Probably you're tired of it, but the point is it still goes on. And Mike Miller, I want to get your reaction from out there in western Washington. Is there much coverage of the Trump trial? Is there much discussion in the bars and barrios of Washington?
Not much. I'm not exactly a bar fly, so I don't know exactly what's happening at those locations. I follow all kinds of different news, and it certainly is a hot topic. And even though I was accused of being a lawyer by the caller not being a lawyer, I always turn to people that I respect and people who would not necessarily agree with me. In other words, a Democrat or a liberal or whatever you want to call it. And these would be people like Alan Dershowitz and Jonathan Turley and Andy McCarthy and people like that. Mm-hmm. And it is clear to me that when this is all done and the history of this is written, it will be considered a travesty that this particular case was ever brought before the people of New York. And that this is clearly a case of lawfare. And I'm a supporter of DeSantis. I wish that Mr. Trump were not running. I will have no choice but to vote for him because I couldn't possibly vote for Mr. Biden. But I think what is being done to this particular man is horrible. And what I fear is it could be used at any time against somebody. I don't want to say like me, but your average American. And using lawfare and what amazes me is the people who I want to respect, I know they know better, and they refuse to admit that this is what's going on. It bothers me in their unwillingness to see it in front of them.
Right.
Ray Hanania, in your sphere of influence, do they see Donald Trump as a sympathetic figure given the pounding he's taken by the American legal system or not?
No, I think that there is a sense of that he doesn't get treated fairly like the left. I think there's that sense, but certainly I agree with Mike that I think this one case involving Stormy Daniel is lawfare. I think it's ridiculous, but I do think that there are other cases that Trump is going to have to face off on. I can't vote for Biden. I probably won't vote for Trump. I'll probably vote for Robert F. Kennedy, and if his name isn't on the ballot, I'm going to write him in. Mm-hmm. I just want to go back to one thing to say, if you don't mind, about the convention. You know, while the students are going to be out, and they were out last in August 1968 during that convention, they're also going to be out in August of 2024 in this convention. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to give them more freedom, more ability to be there and protest even more than they have. Mm-hmm. So I'm expecting that this is going to be worse than we've seen, because the emotions, I think, are greater today over this issue than they were even over 19.
But to the average American who was concerned about whether or not they were going to be drafted, involving also involvement in a war where Americans were dying, there was let me finish. There was an American centric core of this resentment.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you have that now. I think you have observers that say, okay, this is a battle between Jews and non-Jews, called Palestinians, and the United States, we're really not that involved in this. We're not directly involved in this, you know, whether the Israel wins or the Palestinians win. It isn't going to have a great impact on me as a voter in middle America. How would you respond to that?
$40 billion. Well, I mean, listen, my draft number was only 32, and I ended up enlisting
in
the military, even though the war was over. They were going to in, so I enlisted in 1973, and I served several years active duty during the Vietnam War. But the real change at that time was that television brought home the violence to the older community. Mm-hmm. They were upset. It wasn't just the students. It was the older generation. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those students from 1968 are today's older generation. And the younger people are not going to let go of this protest just because the issues are different. They're going to continue pushing it. I believe that.
No, I agree with you. If I can.
Go ahead, sure.
So we don't agree on much, but I absolutely agree with them on that. Because it's not going to resolve the way they want it to. I mean, you have, with this proposal I read about this morning, and God knows where it is this afternoon, you know, there's the question of, well, we're going to release the hostages. Okay, we'll release the hostages. The war has to stop. Netanyahu says, no, I don't think the war is going to stop. We'll take a pause and see where we are at the end of the pause. And if we're not where we want to be, then, you know, we go back to war again. But the hostages will be released in the meantime. I don't know that Hamas is going to do that, but whatever happens, whatever deal they come up with, nobody's going to be happy with it, okay?
Right.
The Israeli mm-hmm. government's not going to be happy with it. I was reading about that this morning. I mean, you know,
he's
got some crazy people and that he's got to deal with. You know, there's some other crazy people on the other side. And the issue here is, you know, there was an American tinge. This was because I participated in it, this was a very American protest. These were American kids and their parents protesting the war, protesting the draft, saying, you know,
that's
World War
then, but it's not now.
Yeah, right, it's not. I'm drawing the contrast.
That's the point.
I'm drawing the contrast. This is not an American protest. This is a protest of some people who are basically anti-American. They're screaming death to America. Please. We never screamed death to America. We never even screamed death to Lyndon Johnson.
I disagree with that.
No, we never did. Never did.
No, well, I disagree with that, Judith.
Okay, well, I was there.
I was in the National Guard.
You were not happy with you guys, but nobody wanted to kill
you. And you were in the park.
Absolutely. We've discussed this a number of times.
We have.
But the truth
the
is,
the older generation supported the draft. The older generation supported
it. Because they had gone, okay? But they supported World War II. They said absolutely. World War II was a war for civilization, and this was not.
But in this particular case, we also have a real political equation, an arithmetic political equation, and that is the large number of Palestinians living in the state of Michigan, and to a lesser extent in Minnesota, if I may answer my own question, Judith,
right,
as opposed to you interrupting me when I'm asking a question.
Which sorry, I think dear.
That's about the 10th time tonight. So my question is this. Michigan, so goes Michigan, so goes the future of the Democratic Party, Ray. Do you see it that simply?
Yeah, I've interviewed the abandoned Biden movement in every state where they've protested, and their numbers are significant,
right,
and they're not going to change. Now, they're not going to vote for Trump either, but they are going to pull the rug out from under Biden. I don't know if Trump is going to win. He may win, but I don't know. Maybe he's going to rule the country from prison, for all I know. I don't think he's going to be able to pardon himself. I think we're in for big trouble. And I don't see any better candidate that might step up to be a centrist who can bring everybody together. We're polarized.
Tell me about Robert Kennedy.
He put out a statement the other day that I thought was very middle of the road, saying that he supported Israel, he supports the Palestinians, he supports the two-state solution, he wants an end to violence. These are all the things that I support, and I can support that. Now, I live by the 70-30% rule. If I don't support a candidate 100% of the time, if a candidate supports at least 70% of the major issues, I'm going to support him. And so far, I think Kennedy is probably the best candidate out there.
Okay. But, and,
well,
and
Kennedy is also is going to be, you know, he's only on still a handful of states at the moment. But again, he's picking up some states. True. He's on in North Carolina. He's on in Michigan. He's on in a couple of key states.
He should be on the
Nevada.
Debate. He should be in the debate.
And that's what, to me, at this moment in the history of the country, the collective media, the left of center media, the right of center media, the middle media, every academic institution in the country, every newspaper in the country, we should be demanding a debate, between Kennedy, Trump, and Biden.
Absolutely.
Kennedy has got to be in it. And if you tell me, let's put Jill Stein in there, put her in there, put West in there. I want to have a robust debate, not just between, you know, Trump and Biden. I want to have a robust debate because to me, the person that's making the most sense in this entire campaign is Robert F. Kennedy Jr. You may disagree with him on a variety of subjects, but listen to what the guy has to say and give him a chance. That's all he's asking for, is a chance. The American people, the American democracy, the system that everybody loves so much to talk about, American democracy, let it work. Let's find out who supports and get the variety of opinions out there, including throw the libertarians in there. And by the way, if the president of the United States only wants to do one debate, measure him against that. It means he doesn't have the stamina, doesn't have the skills, doesn't have the intellect, or doesn't have the foresightedness to think about the responsibility he has to be the leader of the free world. He wants to lead the free world. The first decision he made about leading the free world for the future of the country was he selected Kamala Harris as his running mate. That's what he thinks about the future of America, Kamala Harris. I want to measure that against a guy who stands up there at 82 years old and tells us what he thinks without a teleprompter. What do you think? And if he's got to sit down, let him sit down for a while. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly.
In the new video series, Fault Lines, Professor Voddie Baucham examines the threat of woke social doctrine versus biblical justice.
The religion of anti-racism has no redemption. We have to be right about what God requires in this critical moment.
Discover the fault lines beneath today's cultural divide.
What God are you trying to appease?
Fault Lines, the 10-part video series and essential 6-part study guide, available at salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.
I love this song!
I love nachos.
Loving everything? You might be buzzed.
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzz warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober.
Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back, and I should mention that before the break we were talking about Robert Kennedy and what ballots he's on at the moment. According to the Kennedy Beacon, which is the House organ for the Kennedy campaign, he has now ballot access in Nevada, Utah, Idaho, Hawaii, Nebraska, Iowa, Michigan, North Carolina, and New Hampshire. And he has an asterisk next to Nevada, Michigan, North Carolina, and New Hampshire as being key ballot access states. So I would think, by the way, we talk with the Kennedy campaign. We've been looking to have a guest representing the campaign. We had an Illinois representative a couple of months ago. We had him on. He did a great job. And then the next week he was fired, not because he was on the show. But anyway, that's a different story. They really don't want anybody on the air talking about the Kennedy campaign unless it is Kennedy, because right now the entire focus is getting on ballots. And again, Judith, you have some thoughts about that. He doesn't necessarily have to be on all the states.
Right, right. You know, I think we're not paying attention to a strategy that could work for somebody like Kennedy in this situation. What he has to do, it's like they said about Donald Trump, he has no path to 270. I don't see a path for Robert Kennedy to 270.
Right.
I do, however, see a path for Robert Kennedy to deny Biden and Trump 270.
Right.
And if he does that, then you're going to see something like the election of 1800, and you're going to have a mighty battle going on in the House of Representatives. And this is something that should not be discounted, because this is not like all the other third party candidacies we've had. This is not somebody that people are kind of like, yeah, well, that's kind of interesting. Maybe I'll vote for the guy, maybe not. People are passionate about Robert Kennedy in a variety of ways. I myself am, you know, nostalgic about the Kennedy situation. I find that what his family did to him the other week was absolutely horrendous.
I agree.
But I think that his strategy, and it could make him president of the United States. It'll be a bloody battle. And I am a Trump supporter. I don't want Donald Trump to lose, okay? I really don't, because I think it's very important. But the person who, in spite of a lot of things about Robert Kennedy that I do not agree with, you know, in a battle against against Donald Trump, I would not vote for Robert Kennedy.
Yeah.
But if he ended up being president of the United States, I could live with that. And the country could live with that.
I think that the most recent poll that NBC had, it showed that for the first time, it showed that Robert Kennedy would be taking more votes away from Donald Trump.
That's crazy.
But just a minute, that's one poll.
Yeah.
They acknowledge that.
Right.
But again, I think anybody on the panel could probably argue both ways. But the question is, we have a unique situation here. And by playing some strategic math, as you have done with the Electoral College, Ray, I heard you say yes along the way with some things that Judith was saying, but I want to get Mike Miller to weigh in on the Robert Kennedy campaign and where you think this fits historically in these historic times.
The only thing I could draw a parallel to would be that gentleman from from Texas. What was his name?
Ross Perot.
Ross Perot. And he really did have a big showing, 20% of the popular vote and mm-hmm. so forth. And it went nowhere. I don't see where Robert Kennedy is going to win states to such a degree that he could somehow stop the 270, in my opinion. I haven't spent as much time following him because I don't think it's reasonable to follow a man that I don't think has a chance to win the presidency. And we must understand that there's still a lot of time for either Mr. Biden or Trump to blow up between now and November.
Mm-hmm.
If Mr. Biden goes into a debate and freezes, or, you know, he comes up with his gaffe machine, that will do him in. If the economy, you know, the economic outlook has all of a sudden begin to sour a little bit, if that continues and inflation continues, I think that Mr. Biden will lose because he will be perceived as not understanding what's going on. And so there's so many things that could happen.
I just don't think
Kennedy is a reasonable solution.
I want to follow up on one thing. You said that, you know, you didn't want to spend a lot of time thinking about him because you're not going to vote for him. You don't think he's viable. How do you feel about leaders of the American media establishment who get together and come to the same conclusion that they're not going to give this guy the time of day? How do you feel about that?
But see, that's different than me. I think that's
wrong.
I think that he should be. Idea of him being on the stage, I think he is important enough in the situation that he should be on the stage along with Biden. Now, I don't think that Jill Stein, she's going to get 1% of the vote. Cornel West has, I think he's just gone lunatic on. I kind of respected the guy, and I think he might get 1%. But I think Kennedy could easily get a large percentage, and he should be there. And there have been third-party candidates who have been on the stage, but I don't have much faith in the press. I think that they put their thumb on the scale all the time,
yep.
And it's always on one side of the scale,
disgusting.
And that bothers me. I'm disappointed.
Ray's nodding and said he's got a question for you.
I wanted to just say that I don't think it's fair to compare, and I'm not criticizing you, but I don't think it's fair to compare Robert F. Kennedy to Ross Perot, because Ross Perot was up against two very strong rivals, Bill Clinton and George H.W. Bush.
Yeah,
Robert F. Kennedy is up against a guy who I think of, Joe Biden, who I think of Rosanna Dana, who asked about what's all this stuff about presidential erections. And I'm thinking about the daily, the daily remark about the riots during the convention when he used that malapropism that we're here to preserve We're not disorder. Here to create disorder. We're here to preserve disorder.
Yeah.
And that last part was meant to be disorder, but he said disorder.
Yes.
So we're in a whole different ball game against two very weak candidates, and Robert F. Kennedy could stand up and build off of that far better than Ross Perot did.
I don't think Ross Perot got no delegates.
I think the
that's why I don't think he has a chance.
Well, he ran a nationwide campaign, if I remember.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is don't run a nationwide campaign, run a targeted campaign, and you might get some more. But I don't want to see that, okay, because I believe that Donald Trump is going to be elected. I believe that he is not going to be convicted under any of this stuff. And I think the strongest – just one point I want to make because Ray, you mentioned this. You know, he's going to pardon himself. First of all, I don't think he's going to pardon himself.
Can't.
Whether he can or he can't, the strongest way to keep him from doing that, and Neil Gorsuch raised it at the Supreme Court, is, you know, thank God nobody's ever asked us to do that again. But if every president who leaves office has to worry that his successor is going to start prosecuting for things they did, then they're going to start pardoning themselves, and this is not something we want. So I think what you're going to see out of the Supreme Court is a limited holding on immunity that says what you do when you're in office is his official acts gives the president immunity, and he's going to send it back either to the trial court or to these crazy people in the D.C. Circuit and make them review that. And it's going to take a long time to work out. But the president has to have immunity of some kind, or he just couldn't function.
The one thing, Judith, and I want to get your reaction, the one reason why I have always said that the Stormy Daniels trial, from a political standpoint, might be more significant than the others, although I think legally it is not. But in the court of public opinion, and the fact that women do vote in this country, and this entire campaign for Donald Trump at the moment, as far as the prosecutor's campaign against him in the Stormy Daniels trial, is to just keep reminding people what a misogynist, you know, SOB he was or is. And I'm wondering, is this continuing to rile up women, or is the issue of abortion going to outweigh that? What are women thinking about? Don't they want to punish Donald Trump for something?
No, here's the thing. If there are women who want to punish Donald Trump, not for sleeping with Stormy Daniels, okay, because they don't like Melania.
Stormy Daniels does.
But yeah, she's already, you know, might remind you that Stormy Daniels owes Donald Trump $300,000 in attorney fees.
Wasn't that extortion?
Yes. It was extortion, okay? Particularly if it never happened, and we'll never know whether it did or it didn't, okay? You have to listen to the testimony that's been going on in the courtroom. Unfortunately, it's not being broadcast, but Alvin Bragg isn't doing so well. That's number one. And women don't really care about that. Abortion? Yes, a lot of women care about abortion. Those women are mad at Donald Trump. They're not going to be not mad at Donald Trump. And they're not going to get madder at Donald Trump over Stormy Daniels because they don't care, because they don't really like, they don't like Melania either. So it doesn't matter to them. You know, we didn't just discover after the Hollywood Access tape that Donald Trump was a wild billionaire playboy.
Yeah.
We knew that's what he was beforehand.
Yeah, right.
So, you know.
This is true.
Yeah.
Back shortly, 1-800-723-8029. We do have a caller on the line, I think, and we will hear from her in a moment. Don't go away.
Matthew.
Huh? Oh, sorry.
It's okay. I just need you to listen to me.
I know that a lot of times, Mom, it might not seem like I'm listening to you, but I am. I hear you. And what you say really does matter to me.
I mean, let's be honest. No kid likes rules, but I get why we have them. I hear you, and I know it's because you care.
All the talks we've had over the years,
including what you've told me about not using alcohol and other drugs, they stick with me. And believe it or not, they really do make a difference, especially at times that matter most.
Hey, want a drink?
No thanks, I'm good. So thank you, Dad, for talking and preparing me for what's ahead.
Thanks, Mom, for never giving up and always being my biggest fan.
Thank you for letting me know what you expect, so I can try to meet your expectations.
Thank you for talking.
For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Bruce Dumont back, and in his monthly visit on this program, we ask our economist Mike Miller to give an assessment of the economy and also the remarks he would give to the President of the United States. So, Mike, let's take a moment to get your monthly assessment of the Biden administration.
Yeah, so the things have actually turned sour for Mr. Biden. You know that I was very balanced before, that the economy was doing fine in terms of growth, and it was doing fine in terms of employment. We're now seeing that inflation has not, in fact, inflation has begun to rise again, and it has not fallen below 3% since middle of 2022. So it or 2023, we've seen no change in the inflation rate. Real wages continue to actually fall, not rise. People are going to notice this. I couldn't believe that Mr. Biden, I assume it was on his teleprompter, has made it a statement that he will absolutely allow the tax cuts of Mr. Trump to expire, which means taxes will rise for everyone who is listening to this show. Every different income group of people will have higher taxes because of that action by Mr. Biden, which, of course, I think is a mistake on his part. Gross domestic product came out. It is below potential. The economy is not growing as smartly as it was. The number of jobs available for the unemployed to take has fallen. So when you look at the whole thing, that people are not getting the raises that they need to keep up with inflation, that inflation is in fact going nowhere, and if anything, it is going up. And the Fed has made it clear that they recognize this, and they're not going to lower interest rates between now and, my guess is, the election. So if Mr. Biden was hoping for an interest rate bump this summer or whatever, I think that has those hopes have been dashed, because the Fed is demanding that it have very strong evidence that inflation is close to the 2% target. So I think this has been a, since I was last on, this has been a terrible month for Mr. Biden. And that's why I'm kind of convinced that in spite of everything we're saying and, you know, the Democrats are going to have their big fights in Chicago and so forth, mm-hmm. it could all come down. It's the economy, stupid. And it is not looking good for Mr. Biden's position. And all Mr. Trump has to do is stand there and recite these things, especially with regard to his tax cut, which led to the largest increase ever in terms of the revenues that come in from the corporate tax. That's right. And on top of that, the tax cuts affected the people in the middle and below more so than it affected the people at the top. And they're all going to lose those tax cuts. Now, they're not substantial, but they're all going to lose those tax cuts because Mr. Biden says, I guarantee you I am not going to, I'm going to allow these things to die.
Well, we will look forward. We will look forward to your assessment in the month of June, which will be coming up.
Sure.
But I want to just put a. We've only got a few minutes left. Everybody can jump for this one. The term Vice President Kristi Noem, is that a term we're ever going to hear uttered anywhere?
Nope.
No.
No.
And right? I still think it's going to be Tim Scott.
What do you think?
I heard her try to explain that she never really met Kim Jong-un and that she had it taken out of her book from an early copy. Yeah. And she's even not addressing it directly. I think she's kind of made a joke of herself, and I really don't see any future for her at all.
No. Yeah. Judith?
Yeah, no, I
didn't think much of her anyway.
We're not, well, we're not into killing puppies, no matter what you say about it.
That's a killer. That'll destroy
I can't believe that her judgment is so bad to put a story like that in a book that's supposed to promote her. That's the issue. Yeah. It's crazy.
But, you know, if people had found out, they would say that she had hidden that. But I was never a great fan of hers. I'm still thinking Tim Scott, black man, vice president for the for Mr. Trump, a Republican black man for vice president. I think it's a winning ticket. I just see it as
Jim
a winning Sherwood ticket.
Sees it differently.
Well, you know, I agree with you about Tim Scott, and he's a very strong candidate, and I think it would be terrific. The other person though that I see on there is potentially Doug Burgum. Okay. The reason for Trump keeps saying, I want somebody who can step in and be president. Okay. So Burgum was a governor. He knows how to run something. He was a businessman. And he's kind of a steady guy. You know, he's not a mean, Tim Scott has been great. And as Trump says, you know, you're better than me in terms of, you know, being a rabble rouser and all that. Trump's his own rabble rouser. You know, you don't need the traditional. Yeah. Vice president to come along and, you know, slap the legs out of everybody. I think Don
Bruce
Burgum
didn't
could,
Bergman impress
Doug Bergman
you?
Could be a nice.
Well, Bergman Bergman impressed me early in the primary process, but didn't impress me much during the process. However, a name I'm going to put up because I've talked for the last several weeks about it, and that is Marco Rubio. There's been good positive things that have come out of the Trump administration. Or
can't come from the same state.
Well, I understand that has been addressed. There's a way to address that.
The only way to address it is not to count the electoral votes from that state, and you do not want to not
and that's
count
Florida.
Ray, who, who do you want?
Problem.
Ray, who do you want?
No, I think that's
in?
A mistake.
Yeah,
I don't think it matters who Trump puts in as vice president. I think he's going to get. The votes that he's going to get because of ideology and people that are so dedicated to his personality, it won't really matter. I don't think he gets any bump at all beyond whatever he's going to get.
Well, now you agree with Trump.
But is there not one group that Trump seems to be wooing are black males?
Yes.
And would not a black male, and I see him as a strong black male figure. Yes. Tim Scott. He's really a well-rounded man. And I just wonder, a lot of black males might say, yeah, I can go. If my man, Tim Scott, is with Trump, I can go with Trump just so I can get Tim Scott in there. I think he has the chance to make a difference.
When you say that, you're also saying, would he be the choice of suburban white women? And, you know, I'm going to say
he might be.
He might be.
He might be.
You're not going to hear anybody on Big League Radio or TV say that. But I just said it.
Yep. He
might be exactly what some suburban white women want as their vice president.
That's
right.
I'm Bruce Dumont. Our thanks to Mike Miller and Ray Hannity and Judith Sherwin and Fritz Goldman for assistance in the production of this program. I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
This is Hugh Hewitt for townhall.com. What Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg is doing in Manhattan in his contrived case against Donald Trump is appalling, and it will get worse before it gets better in terms of interference with the